You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maury Skilfer.
And I'm Susie Hunt.
And we are starting our new batch of films with episode 45. We're going to be talking about comic book horror movies. And we're kicking things off with 2019's Hellboy. I know this is a much maligned movie by a lot of fans, but we'll get into that. This is it's 2 hours and 1 minute. Directed by Neil Marshall, who is someone we've actually seen some stuff from before. He directed The Descent, Dog Soldiers, Doomsday, one of the Tales from Halloween episodes. And then he did a bunch of TV stuff. He did some Constantine episodes, some Game of Thrones episodes, and Hannibal. So pretty good director.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some pretty good shows there.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, those movies, like, I friggin' love Dog Soldiers. That's when we get to werewolves, that's definitely going to be on the docket. And I would love to cover Doomsday. I had a lot of fun with that movie, too. And of course, you guys already know I've been hyping Tales of Halloween since like last year. So I love that movie. But now the cast, we have a huge cast, so I didn't write down everybody. I only wrote down a handful of the main players. But we have Nimue, or the Blood Queen, played by Mia Jovovich. We know her, obviously, from The Fifth Element, Resident Evil, Zoolander, The Messenger, a bunch of different movies. Gnidia, I'm sure I said that wrong, but is played by Penelope Mitchell. She was in Hemlock Grove, The Vampire Diaries. And now there's two horror movies that, one I've seen a preview for that I want to see and I keep forgetting about, called Curve. And it's apparently a woman who gets, like, she gets into a car accident out in the middle of nowhere, and this guy, like, starts, like, hunting her. It looks like a really fucked up kind of thriller. But it looked interesting when I saw the trailer. And there's this other movie I had never heard of until this that I looked up called Gnaw. And it sounds really fucking cool. It's this woman who is, like, trapped in an apartment, and every night something is taking a bite out of her. So it's like this psychological thriller of, is there something really there, or is it all in her head? I'm like, that, I'm gonna have to look that up. That looks cool.
Doesn't it wake her up when it nibbles on her?
It does, but she's missing pieces every time it does. Like, the trailer for it looked pretty cool, so I'm gonna have to check it out. And then we have Professor Broom, played by Ian McShane. A bunch of television, like Magnum PI, Dallas, Miami Vice, Deadwood. Then he did a voice in Coraline. He was in Pirates of the Caribbean, on Stranger Tides. He played Blackbeard. He's in the John Wick movies, American Gods, Death Race. Like, this guy's in a lot of stuff.
If you don't like Ian McShane, get out of my life right now, because I don't need that negativity in this day and age.
Right? Dude's an amazing actor.
And he also plays the voice of Mr. Wednesday on the Kindle, or the Audible version of American Gods.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Good to know.
I know that from personal experience.
Now, is that the audio drama, or did he do like a reading of it?
He does his part.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, because
it's one of those Audible books that you have multiple casts.
Gotcha. I say, because there was an audio version I got. God, it was a long time ago. I want to say it was on CD, but I forgot who read it. It was one person reading it. But it was good. It was a good audio version. So I'll have to check out Audible. I have my subscription still, and I have plenty of credits laying around. I haven't been listening to as many books as I usually do. But then we have Hellboy, played by David Harbour. Am I saying his name right? I always say it wrong.
I just say Haba.
Haba?
Haba.
Haba.
I think it's Harbour.
It's
Harbour, yeah.
We, of course, know him from Stranger Things. You know, that's where a lot of people are going to know him from. But he also had some minor roles in Suicide Squad, The Green Hornet, War of the Worlds, Quantum of Solace. He was in Kinsey, that I think it was a made for TV movie, wasn't it? About the Kinsey reports.
Well, I don't know.
I think so.
That sex doctor. But then we have,
I know him. The first thing that I ever saw him in was The Newsroom,
oh,
which
okay.
was yeah, that show with Jeff Daniels that was on HBO. Mm-hmm. I highly, highly recommend that series if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, I can't say that I have. I mean, I know of it, but I've never watched it.
You should get on that. It's an Aaron Sorkin gig, so.
Ah, I'll see if I can track that down. And then we have Lobster Johnson, played by Thomas Hayden Church. I remember when me and Reese saw this in the theater. I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but I was so fucking excited when Lobster Johnson showed up. It was like, he's such a cool comic character. I was so happy to see him. But yeah, played by Thomas Hayden Church. Of course, we know him from Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight. He plays Roach. He was in Wings, Cheers, 21 Jump Street, then Spider-Man 3, Monkey Bone, and that wine movie, was it Sideways? With
Sideways.
Paul Giamatti. Oh,
yeah.
That was a weird film.
Yeah.
And then now I know I'm going to say this name wrong, but I think it Gruagach, however you say it, played the pig guy.
Played Grugo. By
Rocksteady.
Yeah. No, Bebop. Bebop's the pig guy.
Oh, I thought Rocksteady was the pig. I kept calling, okay.
Yeah, Bebop. He's the rhino.
Yeah, Bebop.
But he was played by Stephen Graham. Now, of course, we know him from Snatch, Gangs of New York. And there's a movie that he's in that I have to find a way to get on this show, Doghouse. It is fucking hilarious. It's a zombie comedy about basically this guy gets dumped by his fiance, and his buddies all take him out for a weekend of debauchery, and they go to this small town where apparently the women outnumber the men like 4-1. So they're like, oh, you're gonna hook up with somebody. Well, little do they know that it was a testing ground for a military experiment, and there's this chemical that turned all of the women into zombies. So, and they're hell-bent on killing men. So. They get there and all of the women want them dead. And it's fucking hilarious. Like, it's such a good movie. It was one of those Netflix finds that I stumbled upon at like 2 a.m. and fell in love with this film. But then we have Alice, played by Sasha Lane. Now, I don't know her from anything other than this, but apparently she's in that new Apple TV Amazing Stories, which looked really good.
Yeah,
The only thing I saw that she was in was the American Honey movie. I didn't see it, but she's also in that Netflix, I think it's a Netflix show, Daniel Isn't Dead.
Oh, see, I'm not familiar with that one.
I'm sorry, Daniel Isn't Real.
Daniel is yeah, have no idea.
I'm not real yet.
I do like her though. Like, she was really good in this. Like, I would definitely like to see her in more stuff. But then we have Major Ben. I'm probably going to say this wrong, but Major Ben Damio, played by Daniel Dae Kim. This guy's in everything. Yep. He's in Law & Order, NYPD Blue, Beverly Hills 90210, Seinfeld, Angel, The Shield, Spider-Man 2. Like, the list goes on and on. Does a ton of voice work for one of my favorite G.I. Joe incarnations, G.I. Joe Renegades. He was in that. He's in the new She-Ra and the Princesses of Power show on Netflix. He was in Avatar The Last Airbender. And then he does voices for the Saints Row video games. So this guy's all over the place.
He got real big by playing Jin on Lost.
Was that what he kind of took off from?
That's the first thing I ever remember seeing him on was Lost. And then he just kind of exploded.
Right. I'll be honest, like, this is the only movie that I really recognized him from. Like, I've seen a lot of the stuff that he was in, but, you know, he only played, like, a character in, like, a certain episode of a lot of these shows.
Yeah.
So, like, I didn't really recognize the guy, but he was really good in this. But as soon as I saw the voice work he did, I'm like, oh, shit, I know tons of his voice work, apparently. And then Baba Yaga was played by two people. The voice was done by Emma Tate, who does a ton of voice work. She did a bunch of stuff for the Wallace and Gromit movies, like Curse of the Were-Rabbit. and then a lot of video game stuff, including the Dragon Quest games, Dragon Age, Bloodborne, and Horizon Zero Dawn. And then Troy James, who I friggin' love this guy, but he's in a lot of horror movies. He's in The Void, Channel Zero, The Strain, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. He's the rubber band man, the guy that can kind of like collapse his entire body. Mm-hmm. And like he played, the Jangly Man in Scary Stories, which was creepy as fuck. And he played, I can't think of his name. It was something Jack in Channel Zero, and he was amazing in it. But it's the last season of Channel Zero, which was a shame because that was the best season of it. But yeah, he's just really good. I always get excited when I see his name on the cast because I know there's going to be some kind of creepy contortionism happening.
Mm-hmm.
But so anyone who's listened to this is, I'm assuming, is aware of the basics of Hellboy. But for anyone who isn't, it's a story about a demon who has come to Earth and is raised by humans, particularly Professor Broom, who helps to run the BPRD, the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense, and he's kind of trained to become a weapon against darkness. Now, this movie is about Hellboy being caught between the, you know, forces of the supernatural and the world of the humans, and he's battling an ancient sorceress who wants to return the world to what it once was, where the things that hide in the dark no longer have to hide. So he's kind of torn between the world he knows and a world where he could be normal. So yeah, I honestly really like this movie. So I guess this is a good time as any to go around the table. So let's start with you, Maurice. What are your thoughts on the film?
Well, as you know, I really enjoyed the movie, even though it has its haters.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it in the theater, and I thought it was better than what they gave it. I don't know what people are talking about. I love the whole dark story rather than the superhero story from the Del Toro. I'm not hating on the Del Toro movies now.
Oh, absolutely.
I enjoy them, but I've grown up in reading the comics. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather read the dark Hellboy. It's, you know, more aligned with the books.
Right.
I thought the acting was good. A lot of good actors. The graphics were, you know, CGI. I mean, you could tell.
Yeah, but, they were done. It was done well enough where it didn't break the immersion, you know?
Yeah. The music was excellent.
Oh, yeah. This had a great soundtrack.
Yeah. Really good soundtrack. And last but not least, it had Lobster fucking Johnson.
Hell yeah. Susie, what did you think of this?
I really like this movie. This actually, when I told Shane what movies we were doing, this is the first one that he actually sat down and watched with me that we've done on the show. And I told him I'd give him a shout out. He wants everyone to know that he doesn't care if it was the new one with Ian McShane or if it was the Ron Perlman one. They're both kick-ass, and he wouldn't have minded sitting through either of them. But I really liked it, and I didn't see it in the theater. We watched it at home for the first time several months ago. Mm. And after watching it, like, I'm so bummed that it's not going to go anywhere now because I love the characters. I'm not hating on the Del Toro. But I also like the darker storyline, how he's conflicted trying to find his true self. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree about the soundtrack. It was totally, totally kick-ass.
See, now, for me, I'm torn because I would have loved to see the conclusion to the Del Toro story. Like, if I had a choice, if they were like, do you want to see the reboot? Or do you want to see them finish that story? I would have chosen to finish the story only because I wanted that to be completed. I love Del Toro. I love Ron Perlman. I love that universe that they had built with those two movies. They're fantastic films. But all of that being said, this is a fucking phenomenal movie. Like, I don't understand the hate for it. It's my only complaint is that we're never going to see the end of the Del Toro saga. And I don't like the facial makeup on David Harbour. Like, I don't know what it is. Something about the sunken eyes and the high cheekbones they gave this version of Hellboy. I don't like it versus the Ron Perlman Hellboy look. Like, I feel like something was wrong with the face. Now, and I get why they did it, because and we'll get to this, but when he transforms later, they gave him more of the traditional comic book look to his face. So they were like, okay, they wanted to have that transformation sequence, and I get that. But throughout the movie, it bugged me. However, his performance as Hellboy, I fucking love. Like, I thought he was a great successor to Ron Perlman, because Ron Perlman, I couldn't see anyone else but him doing it. It was kind of like Patrick Stewart as Professor X. Once you see it, it's like, I can't see anyone else in that role. But then, you know, you find the right person, it's like, okay, you know what? I got to give it to you. And that's kind of how I felt about David Harbour. Like, I thought he was great as the character. I love I'm trying to find the right word here, but for lack of a better term, the more like take no nonsense Professor Broom, who's kind of like, fucking do the right thing. Okay. Like, he was just, I like how he was kind of a dick in many scenes. I loved how they took so much from the comic book, you know, like including like the Hellboy in Mexico comic and, you know, the freaking Great Hunt. And there was so much that was pulled straight from the pages of the books that I was geeking out the entire, I mean, Maurice can attest, we were both geeking out the entire time we were watching this movie, and watching it again for this show, I had all those same feelings come rushing back. And the other thing I've noticed about this film, I noticed the first time, but it really came home on the second watching, because this is only the second time I've ever seen it. This movie packs so much into its runtime that there is not a single second of screen time that is unnecessary. Like, it blows my mind how they were able to tightly pack so much content into its runtime. I feel like they told you five stories, you know. It's mm-hmm. so good. But yeah, so I absolutely adore this. It sounds like all three of us are on the same page. So let's get into the meat of this one. We open up on a battlefield in soft gray colors. We see like all these knights dead on the battlefield, and there's a crow pecking at an eyeball of a fallen soldier. And we get this narration over the top that says the year is 517 AD, known as the Dark Ages, and for fucking good reason. that kind of sets the tone for the rest of the film. But the narrator goes on to explain about the endless war between mankind and the creatures of the darkness. And we see knights fighting these, you know, fairy folk and whatnot. And then we see a group going up to Pendle Hill. And we see all these fairies and, you know, goblins and trolls crawling all over it. And this is where we meet Nimue, the Blood Queen. She's standing in front of this big gnarled tree, and we see King Arthur and Merlin and a few of his knights approach, and they look as though they're going to surrender. And as they're about to surrender, they ambush them, and we get Gnida, who is Nimue's sister, helps them to defeat Nimue's spells, and then they stab her to the tree with this big spear. You know, she goes on to explain how no weapon of mortal men can kill her. And then Arthur pulls out Excalibur, and, you know, it's no weapon of mortal men, so he's able to chop her up. And once he starts hacking her apart, the creatures of the darkness go hide, and they take off. And then he hacks her into bits, puts her pieces into different caskets, seals it with iron and a prayer, so that only a man of God can open the casket. And then he scatters his knights to the edges of the land and to hide all the caskets. And then we get the title card. So pretty damn good opening there.
You know, again, what song was stuck in my head?
What's that?
The Lion Sleeps Tonight. Nimue, 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 Nimue.
And now I'm not going to be able to not hear that when I hear her name.
You're welcome.
Oh, Lordy. But then we cut to, it says Tijuana, present day, and we see Hellboy is in Mexico, or in Tijuana, looking for a missing BPRD agent. He's looking for Ruiz, and Ruiz went to Mexico to clear out some vampire nests, but then went silent. So he ends up at a luchador match, and pretty much immediately is spotted for being Hellboy. And Ruiz is the one who spots him. Ruiz is in in the ring. He's one of the luchadors, calls him out. They decide to fight. You know, Ruiz is challenging him. They start beating the shit out of each other to this amazing Spanish version of Rock Me Like a Hurricane. I fucking loved that. But, yeah, and then during the fight scene, Hellboy yanks off Ruiz's luchador mask, revealing that he's a vampire. And we see him, like, slowly transforming into this bat-like creature. The crowd flees out of the room. They continue to fight, and Hellboy hucks Ruiz off of him, and he ends up landing on one of the ring posts and gets impaled. And then, of course, you know, Hellboy panics because he didn't mean to kill his friend. He runs over. He's kind of cradling Ruiz, and as Ruiz is dying, he says, "I know you, Anang Un Rama. Your heart beats with rage. I know which side you'll choose in the end. The end is coming." So it kind of leaves him with a very cryptic message. So then we cut from there to a bar where Hellboy's kind of drowning his sorrows. And we get some BPRD agents. They, you know, show up to take him back. And I love this because he turns to the bartender and he tells him one more bottle. And he hands him a bottle of whiskey and he just goes, "They're buying." And he walks away, just leaving them to pay for the tab. So, you know, fun times. But then we cut to a scene that says Colorado, and we see them flying into the BPRD base, and which is, as I said at the top, the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. Now, like I said, this is like a few minutes into the movie, and we've already gotten a giant fight scene, you know, where we establish Nimue and the whole Blood Queen thing. We get a fucking luchador vampire versus Hellboy fight scene. And we've already changed set pieces three times. Like, there is so much happening in this movie. It's crazy. But they get to BPRD, and as they're walking in, you see one of the, like, the maintenance guys painting on a memorial plaque Ruiz's name. Like, you know, he's fallen in battle. And you see this look on Hellboy's face. Like, clearly he's guilt-ridden over it. And then we get this fairly touching scene. We see Hellboy in his room cutting down his horns, which is, it's an ongoing thing for anyone who has never read the books or seen the previous movies. Like, he tries to look more human by cutting off his horns. And so he's, like, kind of filing them down. And Broom comes in, and they kind of have this exchange about how, you know, basically, like, how very important to, you know, shave. And that's kind of what he's helping him do. He starts filing his horns, and he's saying how it takes a real man to hold a razor to his throat day in, day out, and not slice it. You know, so it's kind of like this little discussion about, you know, what it takes to continue going on every day, even though you don't want to.
And so, then when he's done, he looks at Hellboy and he says, "There, don't you look handsome?"
And the Hellboy's like, "Yeah, if you say so, Dad."
Yeah.
But I mean, it was a very touching father-son moment. I like that. And then, Broom explains to him that his old friends at the Osiris Club needs Hellboy's help. And he says, they need your help with a giant problem. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, what's that?" And he goes, "Giants." I love that because Hellboy just goes, "Ah!" And starts laughing. And now we cut to, you know, Gruaga, whatever his fucking name is. We'll call him Bebop.
Gruaga.
So we Gruaga. We cut to Bebop talking to Baba Yaga. And we find out he wants to kill Hellboy. Baba Yaga tells him that she'll show him where the pieces of the Blood Queen are hidden so that he can put her back together and have his revenge. And then we cut to England, and we see Hellboy arriving on a plane and then driving to the Osiris Club. Once we get to the club, we kind of see that it's basically like an elk lodge for people who kill creatures, monsters and whatnot. And they explain the history of the club and the Great Hunt. Now, the Great Hunt is basically they get together and they hunt down a giant, and they chop its head off and mount it on their wall. So they're talking about how giants have to be put down once they've awoken, because they will continue on a rampage, killing and eating everything they can find. They talk about how it's the marrow inside of bones. They can't get enough, so they just keep on killing and sucking out marrow. Well, sounds like a lovely, lovely way to go. Mm-hmm. But he kind of gets a little bit of the backstory, and we see a photo with it's one of the last great hunts, and we see Professor Broom in the photo. And, Hellboy comments on how, you know, hey, we knew that dad barely aged, but none of you look like you've aged a day. And they explain that there's a reason for that. And now we meet Elizabeth Hatton, the seer. She comes in and explains that all of them were, does she say cursed or gifted? I can't remember what she says, but
I don't remember.
Basically, they are supposed to, they age slowly until their job is complete. And what their job was to kill the creature that was supposed to bring about the end. And Hellboy commented on, did the thing ever show up? And she goes, oh, yes, you did. And then it cuts to an origin story. And we see a little island out off of Scotland with a bunch of Nazis during World War II and Grigori Rasputin. And they're trying to summon the demon, which is Hellboy. And then, of course, the Allied forces and Lobster Johnson show up and beat the shit out of the Nazis. But they already succeeded. They summoned the demon. And we see Hellboy rise up and Broom pull his gun on him. And then that's when we cut back to reality. And Hellboy makes the comment of, you know, Hellboy's just staring very upset, and Hatton makes the comment of, he never told you. And he goes, yeah, he must have left that part out of our family history. So,
and then he says, I'm a devil spawn and a Nazi. Thanks, Dad.
That's right.
I thought he said that later.
No, he said that when he looked at the photo. After that, he looked at the photo again, and he makes that comment. And then he talks later. He does bring up the thing again. He goes, I found out our history on Nazi Island. But yes,
I like what Lobster Johnson says, because when he goes into the claw, Rasputin, he says, here, so the devil knows who sent you.
Yeah.
and Rasputin says, fuck you. In German, of course.
Right.
Russian. Wasn't it Russian?
Yeah, I think his was Russian.
Rasputin?
Yeah, because
Oh, yeah, he's Russian. Yeah.
Yeah, he was with the Romanovs.
But I want to make a note that Baby Hellboy is not as cute as Baby Yoda.
No.
No fucking way.
This Baby Hellboy, especially.
I'm not saying he's not cute, but he's not as cute as Baby Yoda.
I would say, but now, Mike Mignola's art, his drawings of Baby Hellboy, and the 2004 Del Toro Baby Hellboy was fucking adorable. Maybe not Baby Yoda adorable, but fucking adorable. This Hellboy was cute, but also kind of that cute where it's like, oh, I can see how your mother thinks you're cute, but everyone else is going to say you're ugly.
and like, to go back before everyone got killed, how could you not like those glasses that they are wearing?
Oh, I know, right?
I kind of want a pair.
The 3D goggles?
Yes, the end of the world, 3D goggles.
Yeah, the set pieces in this are outstanding, and like Nazi Island was no exception. Everything from the costuming to just the look of the place was fucking cool. But yeah, so we
then we're at the monastery. Bebop gonna fuck a monk up.
That's right. So we cut to Saint Sebastian's Abbey, and we see the shadow of Bebop approaching the front doors. And then I love this because we see inside all these monks who have had a vow of silence, and they got these little chalkboards around their neck. And they hear these loud booms, and the monks are all looking at each other. And then someone writes the door, and they go running down to the door to check out. And the other monk, the one monk's trying to open the door, and the other monk tries to stop him. And he writes don't on his little chalkboard, and then the door explodes. It crushes the poor monk who was trying to open the door. And then you see Bebop come in and just start rampaging and, like, ripping everybody apart, other than the one monk who was afraid. He leaves him alive and forces him to show him where the casket of the Blood Queen is. So they go down into the bowels of the abbey, and they find the casket. No, Bebop burns himself. As soon as he touches it, he drops it and he screams, "Iron, I fucking hate iron." So that's going to play an important role later. So he tries to force the monk to break his vow of silence and open it. And he won't. And he says, "Only a man of God can open it." And he's like, "Speak." And the monk won't do it. So he says, "Enough." Or he says, "Fuck this." And he grabs the poor monk's tongue and rips it out, shoves it in his own mouth and eats it. And then he speaks in this high-pitched, weaselly little monk voice. And he says the prayer and it opens the box, revealing Nimue's head. She opens her eyes and then it cuts to black. Now we cut back over to the Osiris Club and they're prepping for the great hunt. We see them getting, like, you know, traditional, like, robes on and whatnot. They have this headdress for the leader of the hunt, which is Alistair. And then they all get these big-ass spears hooked up to they look like proton packs on their back. And they're
totally do.
They're like giant electric spears. Because he says we hunt them in the same way we have for centuries, only with a few minor improvements. And then they light it up and it's all electrified. So he shows Hellboy the horse he'll be riding on. He's like, "Don't you have a Jeep or something?" He goes, "Now that wouldn't be very sporting now, would it?" And Hellboy looks at the horse and goes, "This wasn't my idea, pal."
I like what he says before that, though, because they're putting on the masks. And he's like, "Are we going trick-or-treating or hunting giants?"
And then he sees that the elk head and he's like, "Please tell me I don't got to wear that."
Well, only the leader wears the elk mask.
He's like, "Only the leader or the leader of the hunt has the honor of wearing the headdress." And he's like, "Okay, yeah. Good."
Real but, honor.
So they ride out into the countryside and they come upon a house that is completely destroyed. There's bodies strewn everywhere. And the one guy says they'll be back. And Hellboy goes, "How do you know?" And then Alistair says, "Because giants never leave food behind." And they see all these, like, half-eaten bodies. And so they follow the tracks. They end up at this, you know, big stone bridge over a stream. And Alistair tells them, you know, "We'll hide along the bank. The giants will come across the bridge and we'll ambush, or we'll stop them there." And Hellboy goes, "Yeah, this does look like a good spot for an ambush." And Alistair looks at him and says, "My thoughts exactly." And one of the guys behind Hellboy stabs him with the electric spear, goes right through him. So now we get this fight scene between the hunters and Hellboy. And this was kind of brutal because, man, they are, like, spearing him left and right and, like, chunks of meat are coming off. Like, it just looks painful as shit. And it's a pretty interesting sequence, like the fight scene. He's bashing people left and right but getting stabbed. And they're commenting on, "Did you really think we needed your help dealing with something we've dealt with for centuries?" And they comment on, or Alistair comments on, how it's always been him that they've needed to hunt. And Hellboy's being electrocuted. He's fallen unconscious. As he's right about to go out, you see Alistair take out his sword, and he said, "If it's any consolation, your head will make a fine trophy for our wall." And then you see something hit him in the head. And his decapitated head drops in front of Hellboy right as he faints, or right as he passes out. And so we cut to the woods, and we see this house, like, kind of behind the train tracks in the woods. And we go inside, and we see parts of Nimue watching television. I loved that, because it looks like she's sitting up, and then we get the reveal, and it's like her head sitting on her torso, her arm is laying on the armrest holding the remote control.
Yep.
It was fantastic. But she's watching television and being, like, just utterly disgusted at what humanity has done with the world. Bebop comes in with the next part, which is her other leg, sets it down in front of her, and they're talking about how she just needs her other arm. Like, that's all they need before they can piece her back together. And he's going on about how he wants his revenge. And she tells him that, you know, help put her back together, and that she'll give him his revenge, that they'll baptize the world in blood. And then we cut back to Hellboy waking up in the stream, and nearby he sees two of the giants eating the huntsman. And I love it because he goes, "Oh, I guess you did need my help, you bastards," or something like that. And then he
looks, he sees them, they're just chomping heads off of these guys. And he goes, wait, wasn't there three of you? And that's when a giant comes up from behind him and bashes him. So now we get this awesome fight scene between him and the giants. And this is just, it's like a fucking music video. Like, there's great music playing. He's just getting the shit kicked out of him. He's kicking the shit out of giants. There's just viscera and gore everywhere.
And the giants, they can't even fucking win in a movie. Sorry, I just miss football.
So what does that make Cowboy? The Dallas Cowboys?
Don't insult him like that.
I don't follow sports.
He doesn't follow sports well.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys are talking about the foosball. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, the foosball.
That foosball. But so he, one by one, dispatches all three of the giants. And the last one is really fun because he's running from the last giant. He picks up this huge sword and he like flips it up onto his back and starts spinning around with it as the giant's running up. And he hacks off one of the giant's arms, and then he takes him off at the knees with the sword. And then he comes down and hacks the giant's head off. So he's laying there. All the giants are dead. He's starting to slowly pass out again from his wounds. And we see this van come pulling up. People get out, and someone says, yeah, that's him. And then he passes out again. So yeah, this is the second time poor Hellboy has passed out in like a few minutes. But, he wakes up in an apartment, kind of dazed and confused, and now we meet Alice Monahan for the first time. We find out she's a psychic that can speak to the dead, and she's the one who rescued Hellboy from, the giant attack. And they sit down to the table where she's feeding him a very burnt English breakfast.
So Shane said that at this point, if you burn breakfast that bad, like, you just should not serve it.
Yeah, I agree with him. Start over.
But I love how she recites the Jabberwocky.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. Yeah, when they first meet, which we'll get a nod to that a little later. But yes, when they first meet and he doesn't know who she is, she recites the Jabberwocky or starts it. And then he's like, they do the, what is it called, where each person takes a turn. There's a name for that. I can't remember.
I can't either.
But yeah, so they kind of recite back and forth to each other. And then he realizes, he says, little Alice Monahan. And she says, not so little anymore. And then they kind of go on about how her parents have passed away. And, she's on her own. And
she's got a shotgun aimed at his pecker.
I love that. Well, because they sit down at the table. And she goes... She's talking about how she can talk to the dead, and she says they're telling me to kill you, and he says, oh wait, where I wrote it down here, he says they're telling me to kill you, and he laughs it off, and then she cocks the shotgun under the table, telling him, she's like, yeah, but I have a shotgun filled with angel bones pointed at your codger. And he wants to know why everybody wants him dead all of a sudden. And she says, they can see what you can't. The end is coming and you'll be the one that brings it. And then she looks Hellboy over and decides not to do it. And she kind of lets go of the shotgun. And the look on his face is fantastic because he's staying all calm. He's like, fine, if you're going to do it, do it. And she looks him over and she goes, no. And she lets go. And he goes, oh. He's like all panicked because he almost got his dick shot off. So then she goes under the table and she like waves him down. So he comes down. He's like, what are we doing under here? Or she tells him, first she goes, she says that I'm not afraid of you and I still owe you for saving me as a kid. And then he goes, what are we doing down here? And she goes, avoiding the glass. And then all these special forces come breaking in the windows and door. And of course, Hellboy starts whooping their ass until Broom shows up and he realizes they're all friendlies that he's been beating the hell out of. And he's like, damn it, Dad! So starts yelling at him. And so as they're
leaving, Dad. Right.
as they're leaving, he confronts Broom about their past with Nazi Island. And he tells him that he knew, or he knows that he was there to kill him. And Broom says to him, if you want to dig up all the sordid skeletons of my past, I'll be the first one to hand you a shovel, but now is not the time. And he introduces him to Agent Ben Damio. They immediately don't like each other and start insulting one another. And Broom explains it's a joint operation between the British branch of the BPRD and them and themselves, and that the casket of the Blood Queen at the Abbey has gone missing. They need to find the others, and not knowing that Bebop's already found most of them. He tells Hellboy that he, Ben, and a team will have to go to the Osiris Club again, because that's they know that there's at least one casket there. So Hellboy doesn't want to go, but he doesn't really have a choice. He has to go with Ben. Alice decides she's going. Ben doesn't want her to go, and Hellboy won't go unless Alice goes. So Ben doesn't have a choice. So basically, they all don't want to be going with each other, but they have to.
Doesn't she say something like she's his bodyguard or something?
Yeah. And I love that because Ben tries to get the professor to say, like, no, she can't go. He's like, what about the girl? And he goes, she's a powerful spirit medium. Take her with you. We need all the help we can get. And he's like, begrudgingly, like, grumble, grumble. So Broom heads back to HQ to try to research the whereabouts of the other caskets. And the rest of the team goes off to the Osiris Club. Now, when they get there, Alice immediately has what she calls a psychic migraine. She can hear screaming, like a really bad thing happened there. So Hellboy and the team cautiously approach the club. Alice just blows past them and runs inside, you know, and we see it's basically a fucking slaughterhouse. There are just body parts everywhere. The entire club has been eviscerated. So everyone inside is dead. They find Lady Hatton, who is now dead, and her little seer crystal, her little crystal ball is rolling around the floor. And Alice tells them that the spirit is still there and they need to talk to her, and then warns them that it's pretty disturbing.
Yeah, because then she starts puking up ghosts and shit.
I actually wrote that. I said she puts her hand on Hatton and then barfs up fleshy ghost goo.
That looks like it's like her torso, but attached to like Jabba the Hutt. Like
tail?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. Like it's disgusting. Like, and it's all wet and gooey looking. It's like, oh god, that's gross. But yeah, it's like a decaying tentacle connected to a ghost of a torso. Like, ugh, gross. But it comes flying out of Alice's mouth, and her eyes have turned white. Like she's no longer in control. The ghost is speaking through her. Ghost Hatton tells them, she says that Nimue has returned. And then she says, man will fall to darkness. Those who call the shadows home will rise again. The queen must never find a king. And she says, when Nimue is whole again, then your true destiny will be revealed. This I have seen. And then she says, only then, and she stops. Then she panics and says, they're still here, and disappears back down Alice's throat. This part's funny because Ben asks Alice, he's like, are you all right? She goes, no, a lady just came out of my fucking mouth.
The hell do you expect?
Exactly. So Hellboy goes running off looking for whoever it was that did this and finds Bebop holding on to frickin' Nimue's other arm. Like, he just has the arm out of the casket at this point. And he recognizes Bebop right away. And he's like, oh, I remember you. And then they start fighting, and you know, Bebop's getting his ass kicked and calls for his queen. He's like, help me, my queen. And Nimue appears to Hellboy in a vision, and she tries to convince them that they belong together. She wants him to be her king. And
she's seducing him.
I was gonna say, Hellboy's over there. Whoa, I got a chance to get my dick wet.
Well, she saw that right arm.
The right hand of doom.
Seriously.
Weren't we saying that, forget the dude from last week was wrecking chicks?
Yeah.
There we go. This one's wrecking chicks. But yeah, so she tries to convince him that they belong together, and Piggy Boy escapes, and then she starts to disappear down the hallway, and Hellboy kind of comes to his senses, pulls his gun, and starts shooting at her. But as he's shooting, he's almost hitting Ben, who was behind the vision, and, like, you know, jumps against the wall. He's like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
And he goes, "I missed, didn't I?"
I love that. Now, this is the first time that we get...
He calls him a prick. He said, "You fucking prick."
That's what it was.
And this guy's been the prick the whole time.
Right.
And then that's when he says, "I missed, right?"
I mean, to be fair, Ben kind of has a reason to not like monsters, and we kind of find out a little bit why right here.
Well, yeah, but back up a few minutes, I didn't like what he said about Lady Hatton. He was like, "Oh, clearly she wasn't psychic enough."
It's funny because it's true.
You're not right, man.
Oh, man. So we see Ben is like, he starts struggling and clearly fighting to keep something inside. Like, he looks like he's about to start transforming. He grabs.
Or puke up a ghost himself.
Right. Or maybe he's going to have Lady Hatton ghost puke. But he grabs a syringe of questionable contents and injects it into himself and then starts to calm down. So now we know something's up with Ben, but we just don't know what yet. So yeah, they go running after Piggy Boy and he's gone. So now Ben wants to know what the hell, you know, like what the hell that was about. Like, it seemed like you guys knew each other and, you know, this seemed personal. And then Hellboy goes on to explain how he knows him. And we cut to 1992, and we hear Hellboy kind of narrating. He says, "Fairies like to steal babies and leave changelings in their place for whatever reason." Now we see Alice's parents, and they lead Hellboy over to Alice's crib. And I love this because Hellboy has, like, a fucking Rastafarian hat on and a fucking, like, patchy, wispy beard. But just the look of it was really funny in that scene. And they take him over to the crib, and the mom explains that it looks just like Alice, but she knows it's not her daughter. And Hellboy kind of leans down. He's like, "Oh, I know, these people are weird." He's like, "Uncle Hellboy's here to help." And he pulls out an iron horseshoe and shows it to the baby, who immediately starts crying. And he gets it real close to the baby and starts freaking out. And he's like, "Yeah, that's what I thought, you little bastard."
The dad's like, "What are you doing?"
I know. And he grabs the baby by the leg, and it basically transforms into Piggy Monkey Baby.
Piggy Monkey Baby? Piggy Monkey Baby. Now, is that the same apartment that Alice still lives in? Because it looked exactly the same. Is it supposed to be?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at least that's how I took it. It looked just like the apartment that she was in when we met Alice earlier.
Okay. I didn't know if maybe all the flats in London town looked the same.
That's a good point too, because it was one of those cookie cutter apartment complexes.
Right.
So maybe they all do look the same. But yeah, so he ends up transforming. Hellboy starts to threaten him, basically saying, you know, they want the baby back. You need to tell your little fairy friends and blah, blah, blah. The piggy gets away from him, starts running around the room, basically going, "Fuck you." Hellboy grabs his leg with iron tongs and, you know, his leg starts steaming and smoking. Piggy's freaking out. He spits at Hellboy's eye and scoots up the chimney. And Hellboy starts screaming after him, saying that if they don't bring back the kid, he's going to find every last one of them. And then we cut to the parents and Hellboy sitting in the living room, and Hellboy is reading Looking Glass. Mm-hmm. So, little Alice in Wonderland referenced from before. We hear a knock at the door, and he goes, "About time." They go to the door, and we see the real Alice laying on the doorstep, and a little fairy, like, running away. And he goes, "This better be a fresh diaper, or I'm coming after you."
Yeah, he's a little psychotic at this point.
he was still quite young. Remember, Hellboy ages a lot slower.
Right.
You don't return a baby with a dirty diaper. That's just bad manners.
Well, I know that.
It's bad form. But, yeah, so we cut back to the Osiris Club, and Ben makes a comment. He says, so what's this about? Some fairy tale wanker you pissed off wants revenge? And Alice says, and he's using the Blood Queen to get it. Now, Hellboy gets pretty defensive here. He says maybe the Blood Queen is using him. You know, and then he says maybe she just wants monsters to come out of the shadows and have a chance at living. And they both look at him like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Because clearly Hellboy is a little smitten at this point. Now,
just a little bit.
I really, oh, God.
Come on. She'll give him a multi-pass.
And I mean, you know, Mia Jovovich, she's pretty damn attractive. So
she's only like 44, 45 years old, but she looks amazing.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, she's beautiful. But, I do really like her playing a villain. I know it's only been this in Zoolander, but I would wish she would play more. But I really do like this scene. We cut to all these blind witches, like they're creepy old crones, rebuilding Nimue. They're like sewing her flesh back together and chanting in this circle. And
they're doing a Humpty Dumpty, not to be confused with the Humpty Dance.
They're not getting busy in a Burger King bathroom.
No. But once they finish stitching her together and like they do their hoodoo voodoo chant, do you know in the deleted scenes what was playing at that point?
No.
They cut it out of the movie. Reunited and it feels so good.
Oh, they should have kept it.
I made that part up.
Aww. I want to cut with that actually in the movie.
Wouldn't that have been amazing, though? Like, she finally is whole. They stitch her back together and Peaches and Herb are playing in the background.
And so they totally should have had, like, a little radio playing.
With Bebop holding it, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. But yeah, now she gets up and we see the stitches, like, kind of seal her flesh up. Like, she becomes whole again. And she comments on now she just needs her blood to be fully reborn. So we cut to BPRD London, which is under a fish and chip shop. And I did write this down.
The secret fish lair. Something's fishy here.
It's called codswallop, which is, of course, British slang for nonsense. But it's also, you know, cod, because that's a type of fish. I thought that was funny. So we see the fish and chip shop. They go in. They take the secret elevator down to... before that, the lady behind the counter looks at Hellboy. She's like, I'm going to need to see some ID, love. And he goes, really?
Rules are rules.
How much more you need?
Right. Oh, man. See, I don't know what people don't like about this movie. Like, I'm up to this point, I'm having a blast, you know?
She needed to see his cod swallop. As proof.
Well, she heard about what that right hand could do.
Exactly.
But so they go down to the bowels of the fish lair, and
bowels.
They find Broom in an office, like surrounded by books, and he tells them that this is everything they could find on Nimue so far. And he points to the different books, and he's basically like, "You need to start doing some reading to help me find more." We see Ben goes across the street to a gun shop where he's having a special weapon made, and it's a bullet that's been cast from Judas's silver, mixed with the blood of Saint Dominic and blessed by the Pope. Ben needs this bullet to kill Hellboy. So one more person trying to kill Hellboy.
I knew he was a dick. I kept calling him Scarface.
That is true. We didn't really point out Ben has this massive scar across the side of his face and down his neck. So something looked like something slashed him. But we cut back to Hellboy in the office with his dad and with Alice, and they're all reading.
I love this part because Hellboy says, why does this book have so many words?
And he's asking, like, what are we going to do once we find her? And he's like, well, then we're going to go after her. And he's like, and then what? And he's like, we'll stop her. And then what? And then we're going to stop the next you know, the next threat. And then what? And, like, you could tell he's just being a bastard to annoy his dad.
And he's like, then?
No, and then. And then, and then, and then. But he's like, something on your mind, son? And now we get, we find out how bitter Hellboy is. And he's going on about how, why does it always have to be extinction? Why can't there be another way? Why is it that everything we go up against, we have to kill? And he's looking, Broom is looking at Hellboy, and he goes, she got to you, didn't she? Nimue got to you. And he storms, this has nothing to do with her.
He forgot the best part.
What's that?
He says she used her perky breasts.
She used her feminine wiles to get you.
That's when he got mad. He got, that's when he stomped off, is when he said she used her perky breasts.
Because he didn't want his dad to see that he was getting a little, you know.
He was a little turgid.
he had to run away to hide it.
He had to tuck it in his belt.
Yep.
But I love that because he's like, you don't know her like that, Dad. That's basically the fight. He runs off and gets in the elevator, hits the up button. They start to go up, and then it says going down. And he goes, no, and he hits the up button again. Going down. He's like, going up. And he keeps punching the button, and it says, keeps saying going down. He's like, no, and keeps hitting it, and it starts going down faster and faster and faster until eventually the whole elevator goes black. He can't see what's happening. Then it hits the ground and opens up onto a fog-dense forest. So he steps out of the elevator like, you know, where the fuck am I? And then we see in the distance the chicken-footed house of Baba Yaga come walking up, which, oh, I loved the portrayal of this in the movie. Like, it looked so fucking perfect. I really want Jess to watch this movie because one of her favorite mythical creatures or fairy tales or whatever you want to say is Baba Yaga. She absolutely has an obsession with Baba Yaga, and that was one of her favorite parts of the Hellboy comic books. So I'm like, you have to watch this freaking movie. Which, I didn't rent it for this. I just went ahead and bought the digital version. I'm like, you know what? I haven't bought it yet. I know I'm going to enjoy watching it again. I need to add this to my collection. So I highly recommend, if people have not seen this, give it a watch. It's so much fun. But yes, we see the chicken-footed house walking up in the distance, and Hellboy approaches it. It crouches down to let him get on the front stoop and then lifts back up. And he goes inside, and we see this, you know, the creepy house of Baba Yaga. And we see her giant mortar and pestle in the corner. And Hellboy's walking along, you know, yelling out for her. And she just kind of slithers out of the mortar, which is so fucking creepy. But again, it's the way that guy Troy James can move his body. You know, it's so fucking cool. And now we see Baba Yaga's nasty looking in this.
Like, oh, yeah.
I mean, she's never been portrayed as a beauty queen, but... even she's even more disgusting in this than in Mike Mignola's original designs, and she was pretty gnarly in the comic books.
I mean, her titties are pretty much tube socks stuck to her chest.
She has them tube sock titties.
Yep.
That's how she keeps the guys away.
Hot dog titties.
Oh, it's so wait. What did Carrie used to say? Squiddies? They look like two squids.
Yes.
Squid titties. Oh my god. But and then she's missing an eye, which we find out in a second why, and she has two wooden legs. So she comes stomping out, and her and Hellboy have a little bit of banter back and forth, and she bitches at him for taking her eye and banishing her. And he says something about how she was trying to raise the ghost of Joseph Stalin. What was I supposed to do? And she's like, you shot out my eye and then banished me to this damned dimension. He goes, I thought banishing you to an adjacent dimension was a pretty good idea. She invites him into the dining room, and there's this huge feast laid out. And she's basically talking to him, that saying that it's a celebration, you know, to celebrate the Blood Queen changing the world for all the monsters. And she's going, eat, eat, and kind of, you know, waving her hands at him, like, go ahead, dig in. He opens one of the tureens, and we see child fingers floating in a stew.
Oh, my God, I love this part.
Yeah.
He goes, is that a child? She goes, it's just a human child.
Right. And then You see the kids hanging from meat hooks like in Hellraiser.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a kind of a poignant moment, because if you think about it, like, they're not human. Like, you know, Baba Yaga and freaking Hellboy. So they're looking at it the same way that humans would look at veal. Right. You know, it's like, and there was this disturbing moment for me where I was like, I know that, you know, this is supposed to be horrifying because it's a kid, but at the same time, you kind of understand where their mind is. And then I got freaked out about the idea of veal.
Oh my God.
It like weirded me out. I'm like, whoa, this is, I'm going down a weird rabbit hole here. I need to stop. But so he gets kind of pissed off, and she explains to him, or he tells her he needs to find Nimue. And she tells him that she can tell, or she can show him where Nimue is for a price. And she points at his eyes and she's like, "Your eyes, yellow as piss, my favorite color."
That's probably my favorite line from the movie.
Yellow as piss. Like,
could you imagine her do like sitting in a room of creatures and they're doing an icebreaker? What's your favorite color? Yellow, the color of piss.
I mean, what's so different than saying, you know, red, the color of blood?
True. And you got to figure, to monsters, that's probably, you know, it's probably a good thing.
Exactly. I mean, I think it gives just a little like panache when you, and you know, give that little extra something. Like, I tell people, you know, my car isn't black like my soul or red like the blood of my enemies. She's blue like the bruise I'm about to fucking give you.
That's fantastic. So yeah, so she basically says, "I want one of your eyes to replace the one you took from me." He agrees, and he says, don't I need to sign something? And
oh,
she
my
goes,
God.
"We'll seal it.
Seal it with a kiss." And then she just starts like gnawing on his face. And then he goes, "Oh, how do you have hair on your tongue?"
Yes. Oh, man, that part was so disgusting. And like when she pulls away, there's the big gobs of like phlegmy saliva. Oh, it was so gross looking. And then she tells him that to go to Pendle Hill, that Nimue must reclaim her blood to restore her full power. And he has until midnight. Then she pulls her large like hook knives, and she goes, "Which will it be, the right or the left? And this will hurt a lot." And he stops her. He grabs her hand. And he says, "You'll get your eye as soon as I'm done with it. We never agreed on a time frame. You should have been more specific." And she flips shit and they start fighting. And really cool fight, too, because she's crawling around on all fours like a fucking spider. Like, it was so creepy. And that's where we see the hot dog titties, as you call them, because she flips up on her back and they're waggling all around. Gravity's playing a role. And then after Hellboy kind of wallops her a bit, she clings to the floor, says some incantation, and the house tips forward, throwing him toward the door. He grabs onto the door and she curses him. And she says that you'll have two eyes to see the ones you love most in the world suffer and die. And then the house throws him out. He falls to the ground, and instead of hitting the ground, he falls into the room with Alice and Broom and breaks Winston Churchill's desk.
"Don't you use doors anymore?"
And he goes, "I just got a visit from Baba Yaga, Dad." And he says, you know, he knows where the Blood Queen is, that she's at Pendle Hill, and they have until midnight. So now we cut to Ben, Alice, and Hellboy flying toward Pendle Hill in a helicopter. And Alice is kind of reading about witches, saying it's horrible what you know, people did to them. That all around Pendle Hill, they were killed. Their tongues were cut out and fed to maggots, and then they were buried alive. And then Hellboy tells her, "Don't believe everything you read." And then he gets up and walks away and goes to lay down in the back of the helicopter. And then she goes and asks Ben about his scar, and he won't tell her. And she's like, "I'm just going to keep on asking." Like, neener, neener, neener.
Like, "Will you tell me now? How about now? You ready to talk? Feeling good about it? Let's go."
Exactly. And then so now we finally get Ben's backstory. We find out that he was with a special forces unit in Belize, and they were trying to help this village who was being attacked by what they were calling a man-eater. It was something that was taking away its prey every night and devouring the bodies.
Like the Hall & Oates song.
Right. And there was a very Predator-esque moment where they see a body, like a skinned body, hanging from a tree.
Yeah.
But now we see something in the jungle is picking off his team one by one. And then we see it eventually tackles him to the ground. It, like, jumps out of the bushes, and it's like this jaguar person, jump like a werecat. And it attacks him, and then it cuts back to the helicopter, and he says, "I'm the only one that survived." So, you know, we get a little bit of what's why Ben don't like the monsters. And so we cut to, we see Nimue atop Pendle Hill, and she cuts the tree with a knife and cuts her hand and starts to drain the blood from the tree. And then we cut to the helicopter landing outside the forest, like Ben saying that they can't get any closer. They have to land here. And they start, you know, on foot through the forest. And like this, because they're just running, and eventually Alice stops, and like she's huffing, and she's like, "Give me a minute." She's like, and they're like, "Really?" And she goes, "I'm not a fucking demon or special forces, damn it.
I'm just a person." Right. I will say that bloodbath cleaned her up good, because up until now I was like, "Girl, you need a shower."
Oh, Nimue, yeah.
Yeah, because you know she's gotta be smelling rank after 1,000 years.
Yup. And she had that layer of grime over her whole body.
Right. Like, she needs to exfoliate and deeply, like, moisturize.
Right. So now, as they're waiting in the forest, this, like, things, like, witch zombies, basically, start coming up out of the ground and attacking them. So now we get a little fight scene between the three of them and the witch zombies. And Ben yells at Hellboy to go on ahead. So I love this, because he runs up and he boots one of the zombies' heads while yelling, "Goal!"
Oh, do you know what we forgot about this part?
Goal! Sorry.
When Nimue reaches the tree, mm-hmm. Gilgamesh, or whatever her name is, comes up, walking up with her two sisters.
Nope, that's coming up.
Really?
Yep, it's after she becomes mm-hmm. reborn.
Okay.
Yeah, because so yeah, we get Hellboy running up. Alice and Ben are still fighting, and then we see it's actually right here. The blood finishes filling Nimue's hand. She looks completely different now, and she says, "I am reborn." And then we see all the fairy folk and creatures running up the side of Pendle Hill, all coming out to her, and she's going on about how, you know, she needs an army and that they will rise up and reclaim the day from men. And, you know, basically that they'll no longer will they hide in the shadows, gnawing on bones, dreaming of blood, you know, that they're going to have what they want. And then from behind the tree, Ganida and her two sisters show up holding Nimue's crown. And they beg for mercy. And she says, like, "The mercy you showed me." And she, like, closes her fist. And the two twin sisters start to collapse in on themselves and, like, twist and break. And they're screaming in pain. And then she, like, turns her hand and they just snap and fall over dead. And Ganida stands there in terror holding out the crown to her. And then as she's holding out the crown, we hear a gunshot.
Twist and shout. Twist and shout. Oh, yeah. twist and break.
Exactly. Twist and snap. But yeah, we hear a gunshot and half of Nimue's face gets blown off. She turns and faces all the fairy folk with her one eye hanging out. And they're all like, fuck, get out of here.
There's the eye that Baba Yaga's looking for.
Right. Remember that one. But I love it, because the look on the fairy folks' faces, they just were like, "Oh shit, cheese it, it's the fuzz." Like, they just took off.
Scared ass bitches.
Yep. So now Nimue, like, turns back toward Hellboy. We see him standing there with the smoking gun, and her face starts to heal up and, you know, goes back together. And she tries to once again to convince him that they belong together. Now we cut back to Alice and Ben fighting in the forest. And this is where Alice learns she can punch something so hard she can knock its soul clean out of its body.
I need that move.
Right?
So I'll knock the soul out of you.
She starts knocking the souls out of these witches. And so now Ben's like, she goes, get behind me. And Ben's like, where else am I going to go? So he's hiding behind her. And they beat their way through the forest to get up to Pendle Hill. And
oh, yeah, because earlier when they were fighting, he said for her to get behind him. And she's like, well, right. What the fuck did you think I was going to do?
Right, where else was I going to go? And so we get back up to the Pendle Hill, and Nimue opens a portal, and Bebop goes running through it to escape, and she's standing there talking to Hellboy, trying to convince him. And she says that, why do you fight for those that fear and hate you? So very, very X-Men moment there. And she's telling him that he should join her and be her king and help her usher in the apocalypse of men. And Alice and Ben show up. And then when Nimue sees them, she pulls a thorn from her crown and flings it into Alice's throat. And we see immediately like this poison starts spreading through Alice's body. Hellboy flips out, runs to Alice. Nimue starts to disappear through the portal and says she'll awaken the demon inside of him, even if she has to kill everyone he's ever loved. And then the portal closes. They've escaped. Gnida comes up to Hellboy and says not to pull out the thorn, that it could kill her, and tells him that there is someone who might be able to help. Now we get this kind of a transition sequence where with her narrating over the top of it, telling them to go to Blackfin and there's a seaside cave and yada yada. So we see them traveling to this cave by the sea, going down through the bowels of the cave. And we find all these markers as they're walking down, and she tells them that they need to find Merlin, the Undying. So
she tells them you have to follow the goat path.
That's true. Yes. The goat path to get there. And
forget about the goat path.
Yeah, that's true. My bad. So they find this big stone and they pull it back, and you see this skeletal old man hiding beneath it. He's like, "Murr!" Like, he gets all upset that they woke him up. He's like, "Murr, what's going on?"
I also like, who is it that says it? Is it Hellboy while they're walking? Should we be worried about where that's going? And one acknowledges the question at all. They just are like, don't hear you.
Yeah, it's Ben. Yeah. Well, because they get Merlin up, and he's looking around. He sees the thorn in Alice's throat, and he goes, he says, I recognize that. It's Nimue's magic. And he grabs the thorn and starts like chanting. And as he's chanting, he starts pulling, and you see the black like veins that were in Alice's skin pulling back out. And as he's pulling it, it's like this worm thing that he yanks out of her body, and he flings it, and then it screeches and starts scurrying. And that's when Ben goes, should we be worried about where that's going?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. No one's like, everyone's like, forget about it.
Right. Like, literally no one acknowledges him, but he's just watching this thing scurry away. But then Merlin touches Ben's head, like, sleep. He makes Ben and Alice pass out. And Hellboy looks at him like, what the fuck? And he starts to explain that he needs to speak with only him. And he tells them that he basically tells him of the lineage of Arthur, that, Arthur had a daughter, and that she had a daughter, and so on and so forth. And eventually it ended with, let me see here, I wrote it down, Sarah Bethany Hughes, who was the last descendant of Arthur, who basically fucked a demon on Walpurgis Night and gave birth to Hellboy down in hell.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, she rode on the wings of a demon disguised as a goat.
So she really liked to party, had some kinks.
Yeah, she
for sure.
Yeah, she's got the goat thing really does it for her, apparently. She was really into Black Phillip. So
wanted to live deliciously.
She did indeed. So yeah, we see her giving birth like down in the fires of hell, like on this altar,
And he said, and Merlin's narrating this, he says he was named Anung Un Rama. I always say that wrong. I want to say Sun, but it's not. Anung Un Rama, destroyer of all things. And then we cut back, and Hellboy goes, so my mother was human. And he realizes he's not full demon.
Isn't that the name of Apocalypse?
Apocalypse does have a weird name like that, though.
No, it's Anum Absabur or something.
Okay, yeah, I forget.
Something Sabur.
I don't know. I think it sounds like a black metal band.
It probably is.
Rama.
So yeah, we find out Hellboy is a descendant of Arthur, and I'm sorry. One thing I forgot about was before all of this, Merlin turns to Hellboy and he goes, "Tell me, in your time, are there still stories of Arthur?" And he goes, "Oh yeah, stories, movies, real pop culture phenom."
Oh, it's Ensabaner.
Is that Apocalypse's name?
Yeah, it just came to. I didn't look it up. It just came to my head. Yeah, because we were talking about it.
I know Apocalypse is one of your favorites.
Oh yeah.
So we see he makes Excalibur appear, and it's like it's kind of like vibrating, like it's between two places at once, like it's out of time, and he tells him to take the sword from the stone. So he goes over, and as soon as he touches Excalibur, it stops, and it's like placed in that cave. But he has a vision of himself riding this giant skeletal dragon with a flaming sword and the huge horns with his flaming crown. And he leaps down and starts destroying mankind, like he's ushering in the apocalypse. And so he lets go of the sword and he, you know, stops having the vision. Merlin starts freaking out, telling him he must take the sword. It's the only thing that can stop Nimue. And Hellboy says no. And he starts screaming, you fool, I used the last of my magic to bring it here. And the sword disappears. It fades into nothing. And he starts crumbling, like turning into a skeleton. He's like, at least I don't have to live to see the end. And so he falls apart.
Poor Merlin.
Yeah, he done got dead. Now we cut to Nimue unleashing her plague on London. We see people dying left and right, and then they show up at the Codswallop, and they go into the BPRD, and then we get the lady's like, I'm going to need to see some ID, love, and she pulls out an Uzi and starts shooting her. And of course, poor old lady gets killed. Now we cut back to Ben, Alice, and Hellboy in the cave. And Hellboy explains what happened and why he couldn't take the sword. Like, you know, because he was like, well, so where's Excalibur? And he's like, I couldn't take it. And he explains the vision he had. And then Ben gets a message that the BPRD has been attacked. So they rush back to HQ. They find nothing but death all around and that Broom is gone. So Alice like kind of uses her powers and turns to Hellboy and says he's still alive. And then she kind of adds for now. So they have to find Nimue. And we see on the television, you know, Deus Ex Machina here. We see on the TV, St. Paul's Cathedral is being attacked. And so they rush there. And then we see Hellboy, Alice, and Ben outside the cathedral. They slowly go in and they're looking around. There's death all around outside the cathedral. There's also this really funny moment where they get out of the van and there's special forces units and the one shoots at Hellboy and he's like, hey, I'm on your side. He's like, sorry. That was my bad. But, they go inside and you hear Bebop talking and he's like, oh, is that you? He's like, come on out here. And this giant hulking piggy boy comes walking out and he's like, oh shit.
So, yeah. Cause now they're up against a 5th century sorceress and her gigantic pig monster.
Yep. He starts whooping Hellboy's ass. Like, and we find out iron no longer works on him. And he's like 10 times as strong as he was. So he's knocking Hellboy through pillars. Rubble's falling from the ceiling. Shit's breaking everywhere. Ben gets trapped under some rubble. And he starts freaking out because he gets angry. You know, like the Hulk, he starts
changing again, and he grabs his syringe like he's going to stop himself, but then he looks at Alice and tells her to go, and he throws the syringe aside, and you see him start to transform into a werecat, which is pretty cool. You don't see a lot of werecats.
Yes. Jaguar Man.
It reminded me, there was an old TMNT Adventures character who was basically a Jaguar Man. That reminded me of that. So he gets
any relation to the Jackalman?
To the Jackalman from Thundercats?
Thundercats, yes.
You know, there was a hyena guy in that TMNT. Maybe he's related. But yeah,
so I just wanted to say Jackalman.
Wanted to get a little Thundercats nerd love in here.
Yes.
But we see a Piggy Boy taking on Hellboy and Ben at the same time. Like they start whooping on him. But Piggy Boy still gets the upper hand, knocks Ben out cold, and then gets Hellboy like knocked to his knees. And he picks up this huge like stone basin, and he's going to crush Hellboy's head with it. And he's like talking about how he'll finally have his revenge, and Nimue stops him. He's like, but you promised. She tells him to throw down the basin, so he drops it. And then she looks at him, and she starts to drain the power out of him. And he starts flipping out, and he's like, you fucking bitch! He gets all mad, and she sucks the power out of him, and then closes her hand and squashes him right as he goes, fuck you! And then gets popped.
Because he goes from a big giant pig monster into a little pig boy.
Piggy monkey baby.
Yeah.
He says, fuck you, Hellboy, but Hellboy didn't do it. It was Nimue. Leonard Nimue.
Yes. It was Leonard
Nimue. Oh my God. Somebody please do a Photoshop of Leonard Nimue on Nimue's body.
that's a horror show I don't want to see. But, so she looks down at Hellboy and once again tries to convince him. He refuses, and she destroys the ground beneath him. So, like, the floor collapses into a secret chamber, and we see it's Arthur's tomb. It's been under the St. Paul Cathedral, and we see Arthur.
Didn't he say something like, oh, who would have known it was under here?
Yeah, he goes, oh, it was here the whole time. And so that was fun, and I'm sure that bit of dialogue was kind of added to be like, yeah, we get it, it's plot convenience. We'll reference it here. But we see Arthur, his skeleton sitting upon the throne, and then we see Excalibur in the stone, and Nimue tries to convince him to take Excalibur, to become what he was meant to be. And he refuses. She pulls, like, she uses her magic to pull Broom to her, and he looks just fucking beat to hell. He's alive, but he's beat up. Hellboy, you know, sees his father, and, you know, he wants to go to him, but he still refuses to take the sword. And Nimue, like, takes a claw, basically, on her one finger and plucks part of Broom's throat out. He starts gushing blood, and she drops him into the pit. So Hellboy is cradling his dad, you know, obviously upset that his father's bleeding out to death, and she once again mocks him, telling him that she'll kill everything he loves. So he looks at her, he grabs the sword and starts to pull it out of the stone, and as he pulls it out, the sword starts to ignite. Arthur's corpse goes up in flames, his horns begin to grow, he starts to turn into like this hulking version of Hellboy, and then the flaming crown appears between his horns, and she calls him. Oh, God.
Now, he wouldn't do it for Merlin, but he will do it for the lady with the perky breasts.
Well, he still wants to get it in, so.
Well, he's going to get it in, all right.
So he comes up out of the pit, and as he's walking up, we see the ground outside start to tear open, and demons start to climb up from the pits of hell. And like, these are some awesome fucking designs. Like these creature designs were really cool. They make no sense. Like there's no biological sense to their body structure. And I love it. You know,
that's what makes it so perfect.
Right. Like the floating arms on the one thing, the thing that's like made out of legs, you know, it's like, it looked like the oubliette in Labyrinth with the hands. You know?
Yes.
But, it's a very, very cool sequence of the demons that they just start destroying mankind. There's the one with the giant sword legs that's just stepping on people. I love that. And so now we see, you know, mankind is fucked. Hell is running amok on Earth. And Hellboy is standing before Nimue. So now he is, you know, more demon than himself at this point. Like, he's not quite in control. Now we see Alice wakes up Ben. Ben kind of looks over, sees what's going on. Alice tries to like sneak around behind Hellboy, and Ben starts to load his gun with the magic bullet, basically. And we see Alice sneaks up behind Hellboy where Broom's body is and touches her hand to his head. So she spits out Broom Ghost, and he starts kind of lecturing Hellboy, like, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, do the right thing. Stop being so dumb.
He says, stop being a whiny little shit.
That's what it was. He berates him for being a whiny little bastard. Oh, no one understands me. Buck up. So he, you know, Broom is basically telling him, you know, stop this nonsense. Hellboy looks to Nimue. She kneels before him and says, my king. He takes her hand, and it almost looks like he's gonna go with Nimue. We see Ben line up the shot like he's gonna kill him. And then Hellboy swings Excalibur and decapitates Nimue. Her head goes flying. And then
home run.
Right. Then he stabs the sword down into the ground, which causes the hell gates outside to start to close and like suck back in the demons. And there's this great visual shot where the ground closes as fire shoots up out of a manhole, and then the manhole cover drops down and spins around. This is a cool little effect. But now as we cut back inside and we see Hellboy break off his horns, the fiery crown disappears. He kind of goes back to normal Hellboy size and turns to his dad. And we see, oh, I'm sorry, before he does that, we see Nimue's head. She's laying on the ground still talking. And she's going on and on about, you know, she'll have her revenge. She'll still usher in the apocalypse and blah, blah, blah. And she's laughing. And he looks at her and goes, lady, quit while you're ahead.
But that was great.
But I'm bumped.
And then he hucks her head into the hell gate as it closes up. And she goes screaming into the bowels of hell. So now he goes back to his dad and talks to him. He confronts him and basically wants to know why he let him live if he knew what he was capable of. And Broom tells him how he never once regretted his decision, how even now he doesn't regret his decision. He tells him that he didn't know the first thing about being a father. He's like, he goes, what did I know about being a father? And he tells him that he knew that he was good. And he said that being his dad was the best thing he ever did with his life. So now, you know, Broom goes back inside, like sucks back down through Alice's throat, and we see Ben dismantling the bullet and, you know, shattering it. And Alice turns to him and asks, you know, what was that? And he says it was a mistake. Then we pan over, we see the destroyed London, and then a smash cut to 6 months later, Siberia. And we see Hellboy and Alice infiltrating a bunker, beating the shit out of fools. And they're talking about the Atlantis Society. They get down to the bottom of the stairwell. Ben's there, surprises him. Hellboy tells him to transform, and he goes, it's not that simple. It's a complex chemical reaction to me getting angry. And Hellboy beats the shit out of him. And he makes a kitty growl face, and he goes, now make with the transformation. Welcome to the BPRD. That cracked me up. And you see Ben turn into the Jaguar Man. They break into the bunker, and there's this awesome scene, all set to music, of them just killing Atlantis Society members. So this whole cult is getting destroyed. There's like, Alice is punching souls out of fools, you know, Ben's ripping people apart, Hellboy shooting guys in the face. And at the end, we see at the very back of the room, we see this water tank, and it says Ichthyosapien on it. And then we see a fishman hand slap the glass, and, you know, cut to black. It's Abe Sapien. And that's what we would have had in the sequel, damn it. But, you know.
No,
we
it's get Abe motherfucking Sapien.
Yes. So then we get the credits. And then the mid-credits scene, we see Hellboy getting drunk in a graveyard at Broom's grave. And he's singing Danny Boy. And the ghost of Lobster Johnson shows up to him. Hellboy gushes and geeks out over the clod. I love that because he's like, I know, you want to see the claw, right? And he holds it up, and he goes, oh, that's so cool! And he goes, yeah, I know. And then he tells him that he still has to, he's like, get your shit together, you gotta get back in the fight. And he tells him Broom was a great man who was very proud of him. He goes, get it together, get back in the fight, the world still needs you. And he goes, I will do, Lobster, will do!
I love you, Lobster Johnson!
Yeah! And then he disappears, and he goes, okay, so that just happened. And then cut to black, credits continue to roll.
As Lobster Johnson walks through him and the and the tombstone.
Oh, I loved that mid-credits scene. And, like, I mean, I know that I'm glad we have this movie, but man, am I bummed that we're not getting more with this team.
Well, did you say for the end credit scene, the last one?
Oh, I forgot to do that. What is the very last one?
So with Baba Yaga, or Baba Yaga.
No, Baba Yaga, you had it right.
And she's talking to someone about getting their revenge. And she says, well, if you do this, I'll give you anything you want. And he's like, well, how do you know what I want? She's like, you want your spirit to die or something like that. I forgot how it went.
Oh, I part of me thought, I remembered.
She said, I'll finally let you die.
Oh, who? So was it what? Rasputin?
It doesn't say, but I'm assuming it's Rasputin. Like, it never shows who it is.
Right.
Like, with the caps on, it said monster.
Gotcha.
Monster cock in the,
Monster cock?
Monster cock, yes. So, well, Rasputin, Monster Cock, same difference.
That was what Bethany was all into, Sarah Bethany.
Yeah. Monster
Cock.
Oh, God.
Riding the goat demon.
I think he was supposed to be the big villain of the sequel, but who knows if that's ever going to happen.
Oh, man. Yeah, I completely forgot that there was an end credit scene. Yep. I should have fast-forwarded to the end of the credits. I didn't. I turned it off after the mid-credits, but I'm glad you didn't, because I forgot about that. So, but yeah, overall, fucking great movie, man. Like, and I know there's a lot of people out there who'll be like, well, this isn't horror, and I'm like, nah, I think it is. I know it's superhero, but it's an R-rated comic book movie that plays very heavily in the world of horror, and there's a lot of fucking gore and viscera in this movie.
Yep.
So, I love it. I didn't really look up much trivia on this one, but one thing I did find is that unfortunately the budget for the film was $50 million, and in its U.S. run it only got $21 million, making it a flop, and worldwide it only earned $44 million, so it was $6 million short of making back its budget in the theater. Now, here's where I think that this is an unfair thing, because I'm sure it made some money on DVD, but it was going up against Shazam and fucking Avengers. So, how was it going to make anything? I mean, plus there was already a lot of people who were pissed off because it was a remake, so it already had that going against it.
And it wasn't Ron Perlman, and it wasn't Del Toro.
Well, right. It's as we've discussed so many times in the past, that remakes just immediately have a stigma on them, unfortunately, where it's like, oh, it's a remake, it's going to be bad. And it's like, that's so not the case. Like, look at what happened with RoboCop. And I know I've used that as an example before, where you and I went to go see it because we're like, it looks good. And it turned out to be a fucking amazing movie. But people were like, oh, well, it's not Paul Verhoeven's RoboCop, so it sucks. And it's like, right. Yeah, okay, Paul Verhoeven made a great movie, back in the day. But this is also a great movie. Like, give it a fucking chance. And unfortunately, that's what happened here with a lot of people. But I did write down here that the movie storyline pulls from, there's four Hellboy comic stories. It's Darkness Calls, The Wild Hunt, The Storm and the Fury, and Hellboy in Mexico. So a lot of the plot came from that. Another thing was that the visual effects artists specifically went for more Mignola-styled designs for the monsters, because the original two Hellboy movies were very much based on Del Toro's art designs, and I mean they're gorgeous, like especially in the Golden Army, like the fucking creature designs in that are drop dead gorgeous. Like I love the death that's in that, with the big wings with all the eyes over them and the huge like bone head. It's yeah. Just oh, I still want an action figure of that.
I read that Mike Mignola was more involved to make it more darker tone than superhero.
Right. Well, and that
he was more involved with this movie.
It was basically one of those when it became apparent that they were going to do a remake, he was like, well, I'm going to get involved in this one to kind of make sure that it was something different from the movies that came before it. Because, you know, it's like, why redo it? Why not just finish the story if you're not going to, you know,
he had a falling out with Del Toro over the third movie.
See, now I read that in the trivia too, and I question the validity of that one, because I've never seen anywhere else that they've had a falling out. And as recently as the ending of the BPRD comic book, Del Toro was tweeting praise of Mignola's work. So I don't know that they really had a falling out so much as that they couldn't agree maybe on what they wanted to do with the third one. Cause I know, after the second movie, they were planning on making the third one, and then funding fell through and they couldn't get the money together for the third movie. And then after, I think it was 2015, where, Del Toro had tweeted out, like, if this tweet gets so many retweets or so many likes, he'll sit down. Yeah. And then he said he'll sit down with Perlman and Mignola to discuss the third movie. And from what it sounded like, everything was going forward, and then they hit a wall. So I don't know if they just had a disagreement about where it should go, or if they still couldn't find funding to do what they wanted. Because keep in mind, Del Toro, as great as he is, he's had a lot of trouble with getting movies off the ground over the years. Even when they do good, trying to do a sequel, sometimes people don't want to give him the chance. You know?
Well, I mean, he has a lot of wacky movies too that people aren't willing to make a chance, willing to take a chance on.
Right. But it's a shame though, because like every time, you know, they do, it does well. You know.
I mean, what they don't realize is people love Del Toro in his work.
Right. But yeah, I mean I think that this was a fantastic film, and I just wish there was more. You know, I mean, at this point, I'd even take like just a freaking Netflix series or something with this cast.
Yeah. The only other thing I really saw that was interesting was that actor Ed Skrein. Skaren Skrein.
Oh, from Deadpool?
He was originally cast as DeMille.
Right.
But after he found out that DeMille was a Japanese-American, there was a lot of whitewashing and stuff, so he dropped out.
Right.
And then casted Daniel Day Kim.
I mean, that's pretty cool of him to do, because quite honestly, like, yeah, why not cast, you know, a Japanese American to play that character? Because, you know, that's what the character is. You know, it doesn't make sense to cast a white dude to play that role. And again, as we said, he did fucking phenomenal in the role. He was awesome as that character. So I think they made the right decision. Not that the other dude is a bad actor. He was great in Deadpool. But, you know, that's not the role for him.
Yeah, I like Daniel Day-Kim.
Yeah, no, me too. I thought he was really good. But, yeah, I mean, any closing thoughts on this one, guys?
I like it.
Haven't watched it, oh, go ahead.
I'm really sad that we're not going to see a sequel to it, and for all the haters out there, I'm going to be a Karen. I'd like to speak to your manager and find out what's going on.
Agreed. What were you going to say, Reese?
All I'll say is, you know, if you haven't given it a chance, give it a chance. I mean, I think you'll like it. Like you said, I mean, a lot of people say, well, it's not really horror, but I think it is. And I think it's a really good film, and it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And as far as that whole horror thing goes, like, I think one of the hang-ups a lot of people have is they only consider horror to be stuff that scares them. And I always say the same thing, that fear is subjective. It's very much like humor and like attraction. It's all subjective. You know, I always say that if it plays in the sandbox of horror tropes, whether it be a horror comedy, a horror drama, a horror action movie, which is what I would put this as, it's still part of that milieu. You know, it's still part of horror. You know, and that's, I mean, yeah, it's a comic book horror movie. I mean, we're going to see that again with our next offering, which is Swamp Thing. And I mean, yeah, it's made by fucking Wes Craven. You know, it was the script was written by Wes Craven. God, I can't speak today. And there's a lot of horror elements, but it's more of an action movie than anything. But it still plays in that sandbox. So for all the people that want to get into the nitty gritty about, man, that's not horror. Ah, shut up.
Agreed.
But yeah, so I agree with both of you. I'm sick that there's not a sequel. It bothers me so bad. And the people who didn't give this a chance, I know the Del Toro movies are amazing. I know Del Toro's great, and Ron Perlman is like the perfect Hellboy actor. But the poor guy's getting old. You know, he's what, 69 or 70 now, I think. Like, he's an old dude. Like, you know, he might not want to wear the makeup anymore. It's kind of like everyone wants Robert Englund to come back as Freddy one more time. Dude's getting up there. I'd love to see it as well, but, you know, I don't know if I'd want to sit in all that prosthetic bullshit at that age.
Right.
So let these guys retire. But yeah, so I guess we'll wrap it up here then, and we will come back with more comic book goodness next week. So this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.